the radio play, and at the time in the 90s that became known as like conscious rap, right? Like that there was that that a certain kind of party attitude would get radio play, but then Chuck D's radical politics, you know, black liberation politics wouldn't get played on the radio.
Yeah, that's a great question in there too about what kind of rap and hip hop was getting played and what kind.
Hi, my name's Rick Serrano from Catskill, New York. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
Common Ground is a private, not-for-profit organization offering dispute resolution services to the people in Columbia and Greene counties. Common Ground provides trained mediators who work to resolve the differences between two or more participants on issues including family, housing, business, workplace, school, and neighborhood disputes. The mediation process is informal, private, confidential, and voluntary. For more information, please contact Common Ground at 518-943-0523 or on our website www.commongroundinc.org.
Well, hello there. I am Neva Wartell, host of Music for the Masses, inviting you to join me every Sunday from 1 to 3 in the afternoon on an excursion of sound and rhythm, where we discover how much amazing music comes from places in the world you may be familiar with, or you've wondered about, or maybe never even heard of. Music for the Masses comes to you live from Catskill every Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. only on listener-supported, solar-powered, community-based radio for open ears, open minds, and open hearts. 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. Suitable for the avid globe hopper and armchair traveler alike. you might want to pack a map and a sandwich.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jeff Economy of Kingston, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Like a fire hydrant, like a public drinking fountain, like a park bench, WGXC is always there for you, at your service. 90.7 FM, Community Radio.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Alex Galt reports for Columbia Green Media that a new report from New York's Coalition for Open Government finds that many New York counties are violating freedom of information law requirements, and some are failing to enforce proper email communications policies for their officials. The Coalition tested 18 counties and found that 39% didn't respond correctly or sometimes at all to requests for information from the public. Paul Wolf, president of the Coalition for Open Government, said, and I quote, "Only 61% of the counties we sent a FOIL request to acknowledged that request within 5 business days. So 61% compliance is pretty disappointing. FOIL has been in effect in New York for 45 years now, and it's not hard to acknowledge a request within 5 business days, end quote. Locally, Rensselaer and Schoharie counties never responded appropriately to the Coalition's FOIL requests for their elected official email policies. Rensselaer County officials also ignored the follow-up email from the Coalition. Delaware County officials, the survey found, were following the law properly. The survey also found that Delaware and Schoharie County officials did not list their legislators' email addresses publicly. New York has no mechanism to enforce its open meetings or freedom of information laws. Wolf said, and I quote, "No one will be held accountable. No one will be reprimanded for failure to comply. No fines will be imposed. The only recourse for our organization or for others is to go hire an attorney and file a lawsuit. And that's just not a realistic way to enforce the law," end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Sahil Kapoor reports for NBC News that the U.S. House voted on July 21st for legislation to codify the right to contraception nationwide. But Republican Elise Stefanik voted against the Right to Contraception Act, which passed 228-195. Only 8 Republicans voted with the Democrats for the law that would establish a right in federal law for individuals to obtain and use contraceptives. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, in his decision allowing states to ban abortion, wrote that the same logic would overturn the current national right women have to birth control. The bill would need 10 Republicans to vote for it in the Senate, which seems unlikely. Most Republicans across the country are now on record as against women having abortions and access to birth control. Read more about this story at the NBC News website. Melanie Lekosepik is reporting for Capital Region Independent Media. For the time being, the Coyman's Planning Zoning Board of Appeals
has declined to decide on whether an August concert and camping event at Magic Forest Farm can take place until the property owner meets certain conditions for approval. Property owner Joan Mahoney and farm operator Jason Ball originally planned a series of concerts and camping events at the agrotourism site on Bucks Ranch Road for between 250 and 1,000 attendees. Town Supervisor George McHugh filed an appeal requesting the property owner to be required to apply for a use variance rather than a special use permit for the events, claiming the concerts were the focus of the property owner's application rather than the camping, which would be allowed. The board granted McHugh's appeal in May, and Ball and Mahoney decided to apply for a permit for a temporary campground and hold a single concert and weekend camping event from August 5th to August 8th. Town Attorney Andrew Brick said the board requested more information, including an insurance policy, and required Ball to meet with the police chief, town supervisor, and others to determine what needs to be done to ensure the temporary campground and concert is in compliance with town codes. Brick said, and I quote, "The other recommendations from the working group, they fall into two categories. One is a recommendation that two EMTs be on site at all times. I think you want to follow that recommendation. Those are the experts. And then there are some construction or renovations of the road," end quote. Board Chairman Robert Nolan said the biggest sticking point will be the sound levels of the event and camping activities. The board decided music would begin starting at 10:30 a.m. and continue through 11 p.m. The exception would be on Sunday, when it would have to stop at 9 p.m. Brick said he would draft a list of conditions for the event by July 27th, when the board is next scheduled to meet and expected to make a decision. In the meantime, he directed Ball to meet with EMTs and the highway superintendent to talk safety precautions and improvements to the emergency access road. Read more about this story at theupstater.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports or COVID-19 update, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
And now here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the weekend. Well, the National Weather Service in Albany is issuing a heat advisory for the WGXC listening area in effect from noon Saturday to 8 p.m. Sunday. Heat index values reaching around 95 degrees on Saturday and 95 to 102 on Sunday. It will be sunny and hot on Saturday with a temperature high near 93 degrees, and Saturday night partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 70 degrees. And on Sunday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. It will be mostly sunny and hot with a temperature high near 96 degrees. And Sunday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 72.
The times for the sandbar beneath the Rip Van Winkle Bridge to appear are on Saturday between 4:30 and 8 a.m. and from 4:15 p.m. to 8 p.m. Current will be relatively low. Sunday, it appears between 5:10 a.m. to 9 a.m. and from 5 p.m. to 8:40 p.m. Again, the current conditions will be relatively low and calm. Looking way up, we see moderate geomagnetic storms are possible this weekend as we say hello to a slow-moving coronal mass ejection, which is already causing trouble in the radio spectrum. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible and the 24-hour predicted KP index is 5, storm level. The current sunspot number is 124. And I really wanted to do one of those cheesy public radio fun drive bits where I sit quietly and make you contemplate life without us. But the weather this week has been pretty extreme, and I couldn't let you go without proper warnings. And that's how we make it, folks, by having each other's backs. And if you got our back, then consider dumping some of your love, money, positive energy, or even your friends into WGXE.org. We truly appreciate it.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXE sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXE.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXE believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXE is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
All the candlelights, this is it, the night of nights. No more rehearsing and nursing a part. We know every card by heart. Overture, candlelights, this is it. We'll hit the heights, and oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it.
Art Omai is best known for the Sculpture Park and for the Visitor Center, where they have an exhibition space. But just across a small road, there is this red barn where they have artist studios, which they use for their Artists in Residence program. We're going to go inside and have a look. Once a year, the public gets to go into the Red Barn to see into the studios of that year's artists in residence. This year, Omai welcomed 23 artists from around the world. I got the chance to speak with some of them, beginning with a local artist.
My name is Elisa Sakelianos Carter, and my work is intuitive-based and is thinking about blackness as, I guess in the most basic of terms, like as a superpower and a way to protect us and how we survive rather than something that is like working against us. The way that I use material, I'm really interested in like opulence and beauty and abundance and surrounding myself in things that make me feel safe and protected and cared for. This residency has helped me develop my work through the monotype program. That has been really incredible. I've never done monotyping or monoprinting before, and so I was able to spend 5 days working on different prints, and it was like a really exciting process. I love it because you don't necessarily have to know how to draw. That's really interesting to me, and just really different. I used oil-based inks and thinking about the figure differently, and being able to like repeat images really easily. That's very exciting to me. I often use silhouettes in my work, or like all the time, and so that was like a really kind of straightforward way to do it. And then going back into the prints with different materials is like the most exciting aspect to me. So it was such a simple sort of workshop, but it really blew my whole sort of practice open this way and like started something really exciting for me.
And you have this whole table dedicated to crowns, and you recently had your exhibition at Union College.
I did, yes.
And so some of this work was in a different phase in that exhibition.
Yeah.
Could you give a brief synopsis of this project and how it's developed through this residency?
Oh, sure. So this is like the crowns series, I guess. I will actually, to be totally honest, I haven't done a ton of work on the crowns here, but like the way that these work is like I make these collages and then they become these prints that I hand embellish with glitter. And then those become these like larger paintings and the heads of these beings, which are called future ancestors. I think I haven't been thinking as much in the braid imagery right this moment. This will continue. It's an ongoing project, but like this was like definitely a moment with making all of these, which were made previously. But like the other work sort of reflects it. Like it's all of that kind of mark making and movement is in everything. Like I feel like you can see in really any of my paintings that like the hair or the sort of power that I see the hair holding is there, and like the relationship to ancestry and the relationship to ritual and like divinity. And so even though like in this moment I'm not working on the hair collages, I'm definitely still thinking about them as like the source of power that kind of projects into all of the other work, I think.
Well, my name is Lathan McGregor. I'm from Melbourne originally, but now I live in Byron Bay in Australia. I've come to Art Omai through the fellowship here. This work in particular has all originated here. I came over with nothing, basically, just a backpack full of clothes and collected all these magazines, books, periodicals from a deceased estate, actually, just up the road here. And all the paper as well. So it's all been kind of, you know, all this intuitive sort of collection of collages that have come. I don't usually work in collages, but this, I think I'm up to about 300 now, close to 400 collages in 3 weeks, which is a little bit of a purge for me, you know, like trying to get something out, or it's like a little exorcism. But I'm not sure what I can say about it. It's just been nice to be present, you know, and just have a bit of downtime and move paper around, shuffle paper. Yeah. Art Omai has been incredible. I didn't know what to expect. I came with no preconceived ideas. I mean, I'd heard a lot about it from friends, you know, previous residents, and they all said it was amazing, but I had no idea how amazing it was going to be. We're very looked after here. Yeah, it's been an incredible experience, and just, you know, getting to meet a lot of different artists and curators. It's been very, you know, a lot going on. Tired at times, but it's amazing. It's an amazing experience. Yeah.
My name is Sagarika Sundaram, and I'm from India, and I live in New York. And I am in what I think is the best studio at Art Omai. It's the biggest, and this is my working space. I have a second space in the painting shed where I hung the work that I created in this studio. And what I'm showing right now is some older pieces I made, some monotypes on the wall that I did in the monotype workshop here, and a series of sculptures and drawings, like maquettes and models, paper models, and fabric models and sketches that explain my thought process as I developed the hanging installation that's out in that. It looks like a tent. And all of the work is made from wool, and it's felted wool. And I did some indigo dyeing, and for the blue, I used Himalayan wool, and I also used wool locally from, you know, people who donated, had kept keep sheep or work with wool and donated me some of the wool, so that was really beautiful. But this is the first time I made a spatial experiential work. People keep wanting to touch my work, and so I wanted to make a work that the invitation was to be touched by it. And so you can walk through the work and move it, it touches, you can brushes against your body. And yeah, that's what I made in these 3 weeks.
What was the experience of this residency, and why are residencies important for your development?
This residency was amazing. It's a gift. This was like 3 weeks where, I mean, nobody said no to me. And the invitation was to really kind of, I mean, I feel like I made something new. I shifted. And, you know, the environment, everything is designed to help you do that. And I did it. And I'm just so grateful. I will never forget this. It's going to mean a lot to me. Yeah, it means a lot to me.
I work for Francis Greenberger, so I'm the curator of his private collection and also was a visiting curator here at Art Omai. So I got to meet with all of the artists and go over all of their work and what they're doing here from beginning to end. So,
and your name?
Tessa Ferreiros.
Great. So is there any thread of theme that's repeating among the artists this year?
I think the one thing that I've noticed from a lot of them is like the idea of narrative and storytelling that's like so strong and coming across, and like whether it's through their own like cultural histories or like through their own or through their families, and whether that's like actually being represented in a figurative way or whether it's being represented in like how their countries are being identified through the work, whether politically and historically. And that's something that's always strong. And I think that's true of like all artists, like they're always going to draw from a point of narrative, but here it feels like that's definitely something that's tying it all together across the board. So.
Visited the United States from Taiwan. He always brought so much stuff with him. The content in those luggages were a kaleidoscope of ever-changing collection of knickknacks. But what was constant over the years were the containers that accompanied my dad when he showed up, always filled to the brink of bursting.
My name is Thierry Tometi, and I'm a visual artist from Togo, and I'm one of the residents of this Art Omai residency. And actually, all my work are made with cardboard, and I try to destroy them to reconstruct something in order to show people that we don't create anything, we just change things to make them new. Yeah.
Why was this art residency important in the growth of your personal work?
Actually, it's the first time that I'm getting into the US, and the whole experience is really amazing. I say that it's really magic to live with all these animals who kind of inspire us in our works, and also the people with whom I'm sharing my meat every day are really amazing. I really love the experience.
So my name is Yujin Lee, and I'm from South Korea, and I live on this island called Jeju. And I made a work that is very collaborative here, and one is titled a painting that is also a tablecloth, a tent, a curtain, and an amulet. It's a sort of approaching painting as something very light and flexible, something you can touch and use. And so it was actually used as one of the resident dinner tablecloth 2 nights ago outside, a picnic table. And I feel like the works are activated when they're used in that way. For the other work that I did is titled Painting Conversation, and they are in the size of a placemat. And I invite an artist to sit with me in a private space that I created under the tent of the bigger painting. And we have this very private conversation, a process to getting to know each other while we create this painting together. So I made 20 total throughout the past 3 weeks, and 17 were with the artists here, and 3 were with the critics were stopping by my studio. And in the end, really, I almost feel like this work could only exist because I was here at Art Omai, and I met these incredible people from all over the world, and that this work is really in the sense like belongs here in this setting. When we had the dinner, it was a really beautiful, magical moment because people who created this painting with me were all there. So they were like, I made this one, and we were having this kind of conversation, and all the memories and stories were pouring out. So I really liked that. And at the dinner, I said, okay, you can also spill some wine or, you know, paint with the food or whatever. And so people left some marks on the tablecloth, which also became part of the work.
How was this residency important in the development of your work?
I think I've always done a lot of collaboration, but in a very like one-on-one intimate sense. And here you're sort of having breakfast, lunch, and dinner with these 23 other artists for over 3 weeks every day. So the intimacy level, like, it's almost like that group is a person or something like that. And so I'm doing these private painting conversations. Still, it seems very, like, open and, like everybody is involved in each of the painting in some way. So I think for me, like, I could really see how the work can expand outside of just really one-on-one intimate thing into something that's more communal and public. So, and it's also about the scale. I mean, I'm in this big, beautiful barn studio building that gives me all this space to think about my work in a bigger scale. And I think that was very new for my practice. So when it was a tablecloth, was this side was up.
Okay.
With the text in the middle is a land acknowledgement by Art Omai. And I really wanted to include that because I felt like this piece, again, really belongs here. It was, you know, created here, and then they are doing this land acknowledgement reading in the beginning of the residency. So I thought, oh, it would be beautiful if it become part of it. And the picnic was also at a sculpture that is part of the sculpture park by artist Jin Shin. And it's made out of ailing maple trees. And it's also about the environment and gathering and conversations and past and the present and the future. And so, yeah, and the artist Jin Shin apparently lives around here, so she came to the dinner, and it's really like all the stars sort of falling into the right places that this picnic happened and this work was activated. So I'm still blown away by the opportunity I had and all the support that I got from Art Omai. Like, because of the weather, they had to change the date and stuff, and they went through so much to make this dinner happen. And I'm so grateful to have that kind of support as a young artist.
Hi, this is Nushin Rostami.
And Julia Carrillo.
We're here collaborating for a month at Omai residency. We each have our individual practices, sometimes come together to think. This space is our laboratory of ideas and exploration and finding different ways of seeing.
Being able to show whatever we got inspired in this beautiful landscape and, like, with all these people that are really inspiring. So this is just a space to think and to share it and for people to participate and become part of it.
So how did this experience at Art Omai further your collaboration together?
We are going to find out. We don't know yet.
I think most of the times for us has been like planting a seed that eventually will grow up into something else. So here is one of the places where this seed is placed, and it will take us somewhere that we don't really know, but we've been exchanging ideas, and as we collaborate, we exchange subjects, conversations, and then this also merges into our own practices. So hopefully we'll see it everywhere, like in all collaborations, practices, individual, and
in the future. Yeah, that's it.
Maria Ibarretxe.
And the performance name is?
Green Songs Joy.
So you utilize the silo at the art studio barn. How was this experience really important in your development as an artist?
I think it was the first time that I was singing my songs in such a architecture wise. So then I could see how I can start to explore much more all these resonances of my voice and my songs and in different architectures, to really like dancing with the voice in a totally different way, you know, because there are moments that the voice expanded and then you can hear from, you know, from other way, and then how is the, you know, the directions of the voice is... It's amazing, and to have always the bodies of, to listen with the body, it's something important for me, not only with ears.
So calm.
This is Sina Bazilahiki reporting at the Art Omai Studio Barn for Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
For some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC Morning Show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
Good evening, Mr. Apolloni. I'm the sergeant, and this is Officer Doney. I read your statement, and I have a few questions.
Look, I already told you guys everything.
Yeah, well, it's not adding up.
I know.
I want the truth.
Fine.
Buddy, I got a dead body on my hands, and I need answers.
You won't believe it if I told you.
Try me.
I will.
You wouldn't believe some of the things I've believed.
Okay. Okay, then. I was out of the Little League diamond at Hyde Park. I was alone. Tossing the ball up in the air to practice my catches, you know? I threw myself a high popper, wide to my right, so I could try a diver. And I ended up right by the third base, with a face full of dirt. As I looked up, I saw a big, hairy foot, standing on third base. The dust cloud settled, and there it was. A chimpanzee, staring right down at me. He was wearing some sort of loincloth, smiling. And then he used sign language to communicate to me. "Gonna kill your wife," he said. I closed my eyes, rubbed the dirt from them, and when I reopened them, he was gone. He was gone.
No chimp.
No chimp. I assumed I just imagined it. Maybe I had knocked myself loopy from landing so hard.
Did you make the catch?
No. But I don't think I did imagine it, because when I got home, I found my wife all over the house, torn apart, savagely. Limbs in every room, heart ripped out, head was smushed. I called 911, but I lost her on the way to the hospital. And I know that chimp had something to do with this. I know how crazy this all sounds.
And you expect me to believe that shit?
No.
Well, I do.
Why?
I know you're telling the truth. I'm just messing with you.
What?
Officer Doney, can you leave me and the suspect alone for a little while?
Okay, Sarge.
Oh, and tell him out front to hold my calls. I'll be slinking through a secret corridor that leads to an old subterranean lair.
Okay. Bye.
Mr. Apolloni, follow me, please.
The sergeant then peeled back a large square of rug under the interrogation table and lifted a trap door. He led me down a dark stone staircase that led deep underground. He lit candles on the wall as he went, incrementally exposing every crack in this ancient crumbling catacomb. We descended until we reached a hallway where salty crystal icicles hung from a head-high ceiling. Up ahead, there seemed to be a fire already burning. When he led me to the final room, I discovered the firelight was coming from a birthday cake. On it were dozens of burning candles that illuminated a beehive-shaped monolith behind it, lined with human skulls. What is this place?
Yeah, it was the chimp, all right. I've been trying to stop that damn thing for years, to no avail. These here are the skulls of its victims. I collect them down here in hopes that they find peace. I will add your wife's skull here next.
Cool.
I know you will find this hard to believe.
Try me.
That's not just a chimp that you saw. The ghost of a chimp.
What?
A chimp named Mark Twain.
What?
You see, many years ago, that chimp was being kept as a pet. For its 10th birthday, its keepers threw a huge birthday party for it at the Diamond at Hyde Park.
What?
Everything was going fine. There were balloons. But when they thrust the birthday cake in Mark Twain's face so he could blow out the candles, the little flickering flames startled the chimp and it went berserk. It smashed the cake to the ground, but that wasn't the worst of it. It also maimed and murdered. 30 people were at that party. None were left unscathed. If they weren't killed, they at least had some part of them ripped off. The SPCA arrived at the scene and shot that chimp, and as he lay dying, he signed the words, "Gonna come back as a ghost and kill people."
Worst birthday ever.
Every year I come down here and put another candle on this cake. There's no way to catch this monkey, so I do what I can to try to appease his raging spirit. So far, nothing has helped.
Hey, how do you know so much about this Mark Twain?
The answer to that is the zipper.
The zipper?
See this zipper around my wrist? Go ahead. Unzip it.
The sergeant had pulled up his sleeve to show me a zipper that circled his wrist. And as I unzipped it, hair sprouted from underneath as I went, until the most uncanny revelation. What? You have a chimp hand under this fake human hand.
I know so much about Mark Twain because I was there at that party. Some say I was even his owner. If you weren't lucky enough to die at that party, you lost a limb or a nose or private. And in its place miraculously grew the body part of a chimpanzee. I've tried cutting it off, and it just grows right back. A permanent reminder of our failings in trying to tame the wild in nature, and now our humanity is forever held in captivity to that moment. But I'll never quit trying to stop him. I feel too responsible.
The sergeant then took out his human eye and wiped a tear from the chimp eyeball behind it. It was sad. "Well, Sergeant," I said, "I'm ready to join you in this fight to avenge the death of my Janine." I held out my hand, and the sergeant shook it with his big, hairy paw.
"Go ahead. You're free to go. And don't tell anyone about this."
So I left that ghastly cellar of death. But before I did, I turned around. "Hey, Sarge, it's gonna be okay. We have each other." I may have lost a wife that night, but I gained a friend.
Now to absorb some local color through the magic of AM radio.
The Book of Revelations tells us to watch for the seven signs of evil.
Sign of evil number 4.
Continuing our sign of evil countdown, here's Vanessa Williams.
Lolly, creation schemes, so I suppose I was lucky.
stations and swing parks. Of my mother I stole some money. Had a treat with a bottle of martini. Was so sick I couldn't walk or sit. Since then I've not touched it. I won't bore you with tales of being greedy. I'm just into sleeping. I'm into sleeping. Got a horrible growth. Listen to all this music, dick. It smash hits when she's eating a tea. To me it sounds like bad CB. My father's not back really. He got me these wires and bits. Apart from that he talks to me hardly. I'm just into CB. She's
are strong, but they're not strong enough. They die. A desert winds are strong, but they're not strong enough.
What's the most important issue?
Getting back to the basics of teaching children, not teaching them critical race theory.
And what is critical race theory?
Well, I'm not going to get into the specifics of it because I don't understand it that much, but it's something that I don't, what little bit that I know, I don't care for.
And what have you heard that you don't,
well,
that you
I'm
don't
not,
like?
Well, I'm not going to, you know, I don't have that much knowledge on it, but okay. It's something that I'm not, that I don't care for.
Laboring in confusion, the essence.
Okay.